This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hope you're enjoying this Labor Day. Today, we're going to take a look back at some important milestones in Massachusetts labor history. You'll hear about the Bread and Roses strike, the Boston Police strike of 1919, and more recently, the Market Basket strike. But before we step back into history, we want to take a moment to talk about how politicians are talking about and talking to American workers right now in the midst of this presidential election. So we turn to Professor Tom Kokin. He's co-director of the MIT Sloan Institute for Work and Employment Research, and he discussed with us what he thinks are the most important issues of this election and what American workers stand to gain or lose after November.
Well, the good news is that labor issues, the issues of wages and inequality, are on the table like we haven't seen in any presidential candidate's experience in recent memory. Now, I think they came on the table out of a sense of frustration, anger, but I think now it's time to shift to a more positive message and to talk about what we can do in the future. My message for this Labor Day is directly to the workforce. Get out there and ask these candidates harder questions. Don't let them give you empty rhetoric about supporting workers around Labor Day, supporting unions and collective bargaining. We know that's not enough.
Well, let's take a step back, because it seems that we've had such a long-term decline in union membership in the United States that regardless of what happens in the next 4 or 8 years, I mean, do you see anything reversing that trend?
Well, I see a lot of innovation in the labor force trying to find new ways to exercise voice and leverage. The fight for the $15 an hour minimum wage is one example, because here you don't have formal collective bargaining, but you certainly have workers exercising their voice and influencing employers from Walmart to J.P. Morgan Chase to McDonald's to increasing their minimum wages in response. We need to extend our labor law protections to these new groups of workers so that they can't be discriminated, and let this open up our labor law to let new forms of representation emerge that fit the modern economy.
Well, really interesting, because, I mean, there have been so many discussions and will continue to be about, you know, the freelance economy, the
right.
gig economy, the fact that, you know, any expectations workers used to have about what it means to work for a company are radically changing. I mean, so can you tell me a little bit more about, where you would target certain aspects of U.S. labor law for upgrade or updating?
There are two areas. One is the large number of people who work in various contract jobs. Those who are maybe in franchises like McDonald's, or they're contracting out IT services to an independent organization. And so these people are in sort of a no person's land. They don't know who their employer is, and the labor law is ambiguous. So we need to extend rights to all of those workers so that they are protected and hold employers jointly accountable. Then in the gig economy, we have a need to extend the rights of representation to independent contractors who are excluded completely from the law at the moment. So if we open up our law and we say anybody who works should be entitled to the same protections that we afford to regular employees, and we allow those protections to move with the employee wherever he or she goes, I think we will begin to modernize our labor law. We'll open it up so people see that this gig economy or the contracting arrangements can work for them a little bit better.
Are you optimistic that that could happen?
I think it will. I think we will see in the next Congress debates about this. Whether we will see action depends on what happens, obviously, in the congressional elections.
Before we leave the subject of unions specifically, I do want to ask you, I mean, there's been decades-long debate about the effects that unions have on doing business in America, et cetera. And you know the arguments, and I'm just wanting to hear what your response is to them about, you know, for example, some economists say that dwindling union membership is good because it allows, for example, the labor market to be more flexible.
Well, there's growing evidence that a significant portion of the the growth in inequality in income and wage stagnation is due to union decline. The estimates are between 20 and 30%. There was just a recent report out this week that shows that it affects not only unionized workers, but non-union workers who used to benefit from the spillover effects of unions. Around $150 billion a year is estimated in lost income over this time period because of the decline of unions. So there's no question that it affects workers and the workforce in general negatively. Now, does it affect employers negatively? Labor-management relations vary greatly. Some very traditional, arm's-length, rigid labor management, union management relations do reduce productivity. There's no question about it. That's why some employers oppose them. But we've learned over the years that if you build partnerships with your labor organization, like you see in some of the best airlines at Southwest Airlines, like you see out at Kaiser Permanente in the best healthcare organizations, you can get high productivity with industry-leading wages. But it takes a lot of work, and it takes shared concern, shared leadership, shared respect for both the workforce and for the business enterprise. That's the form of labor management relationship that we could create if we had more commitment to building a high quality labor management relationship that works for the economy.
Well, what about the charge or criticism that unions often stifle innovation? And I'm thinking, you know, one example which is very potent right now in Massachusetts is, you know, we have a ballot question coming up in November over charter schools and lifting the cap over charter schools. And a lot of people who are in support of lifting that cap look at opposition from teachers' unions, for example, and say, well, you know, this is exactly what happens when, that teachers' unions have been the force that has limited innovation in education in Massachusetts. And you see they're opposed to lifting the charter cap. I mean, that's one very specific example, but I think it is it is reflective of a broad-based criticism we've heard quite frequently.
There's no question that there's enormous need for innovation in our public schools, and there are two ways to get it. Denigrating teachers, as they have in Wisconsin, taking away collective bargaining rights, or we can get it as we're working here in Massachusetts with something called the Massachusetts Education Partnership. School superintendents, the School Committees Association, the State Education Department, the two teacher unions, and a number of us in the universities have been working together for about 4 years now to bring about innovation, and I think we have to continue that. That's what brought about the increase in the school day and school year here in Massachusetts, in Boston. The charter school issue is just one piece of this. There's some tension between the two. I think that's a healthy tension, and we just have to manage it and make sure that we respect teachers' rights in whatever form of school we create.
Hmm. So finally, just to get us back to the presidential election, what do you think is at stake for American workers in this election?
Well, there's two things that I think are really critical. We need a president who is going to bind our society and bring groups together and demonstrate through role modeling and leadership and active involvement that people need to work together in our workplaces and respect each other. So I think that's number one. And number two is I believe that if we elect the right leaders, and particularly the right leaders in Congress, because that's where the bottlenecks lie at the moment, then we will make progress. And there's countless numbers of ideas and local innovations that have sprung up. The minimum wage increases at the state level, paid family leave at the state level, sick leave at the state level, pay equity, as we have just seen here in Massachusetts in the last several weeks. And if we have the right leaders in Congress and in the White House, then I think we can take those innovative things from the states that have been tested, that have been tried, that can be tweaked a bit, and carry them to the national level to finally get our labor and employment policies to catch up with the changing workforce that we have, with the changing economy that we have, and prepare our workforce for the changes in technology that are coming ahead.
Well, Tom Kokin is co-director of the MIT Sloan Institute for Work and Employment Research. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Meghna, and happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you. When we come back, a look at two history-making strikes of the early 20th century. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.